Welcome to the Technology Lab, presented by CPA Practice Advisor, with your hosts, Randy Johnston and Brian Tankersley.
I'm Randy Johnston, along with Brian Tankersley. Brian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Brian Tankersley. I've been in the profession since the early 90s, have been doing accounting technology since the late 90s on a professional basis. I've written a few hundred product reviews, and I've spoken in 48 states talking about accounting technology to CPAs.
And I am from Hutchinson, Kansas. I am so pleased to spend time with you today. I have been on the top 100 list since 2004, the top 25 list since 2011. I love to spend time in technology and with my family as well. I'm fortunate enough to have founded Network Management Group, which is a managed service provider, providing services from Boston to Honolulu. And my K2 business is how I met Brian, and it is how we've probably met many of you, producing CPE and PD in the US and Canada. We're so pleased to spend time with you on today's Technology Lab. Good day. Welcome to the Technology Lab. I'm Randy Johnston with co-host Brian Tankersley. We're going to do something a little out of the ordinary for us. We're going to go back and forth on issues related to technology used by CPA firms. So this session on CPA firm tech just gives us a chance to kind of talk to you about various things that are going on. We're going to start with the publishers that are providing tools to the profession, as well as some of the hardware manufacturers, but the start is really around the publishers. So Brian, you and I chat about this, and a lot of times we talk in confidence. So this is one of the rare times that you and I have got to talk about this publicly. You know, we each probably do, 40 hours on this if we were just turned loose. So it's going to be a little hard to get everything turned down. But, you know, talk to me first about what you're thinking about in terms of CPA firm technology providers.
Well, I think when we're talking about this, we're really talking about the software market. And the thing that I would suggest to you is that the market is changing radically. In the past, we had the legacy companies out there, CCH Thompson, Intuit. And, you know, with those through the tech software companies, they have all had significant reorgs and morphs. And a lot of the independents have also sold out to private equity. So what's happening here is the market seems to be pivoting and looking at the accounting market as a cash cow, as opposed to a growth market, you know, right now. And so we're seeing more of this private equity type activity. So service levels dropping somewhat and prices continue going up.
Yeah, understood. And, you know, I don't want to sound negative about that because it's certainly not, but we've had a number of discussions back and forth on us on private equity, venture capital investment, and then some of the companies that have been publicly held in terms of the profit behaviors, I guess I'll call it. And we've seen incidents where layoffs have occurred. Really, you know, if your majority of your costs is around labor, one of the few choices you have is to reduce labor to increase your profitability. You know, it's increase sales or cut costs, and the biggest cost is labor. So I kind of get that.
Well, and all you spend money on at a software company is you spend money on what? Marketing, sales, coders, and support people. And so if you cut any of those four things, it changes the experience pretty significantly.
It does. And one of the trends that we've seen that's maybe not what all of us would buy, but we've seen big CPA firms like Cetron Cooperman take private equity from New Mountain Capital, as an example, to the point that they got a majority interest. Just like that same type of transaction that happened with Eisner Amper in 2021. And, you know, it feels like to me this is an attempt to split off the attestation work from the tax and advisory and consulting work. Is that the way you see that too?
Well, I think the private equity investment in firms certainly does take that on and, you know, tries to create something like that. You know, the thing that's going to be interesting to me, I think, is that if you look at the labor shortage that we have right now, if you take away the path to partner for all those folks, because the private equity groups are going to retain all the equity. Suddenly now the willingness of people to work those 80-hour weeks they're required during busy season is going to go away. So, you know, when it changes from a career to a job, then, it's gonna be quite different. I will say that we've got a lot of independents, and we've got the HG Capitals and the Iris Globals that have gone out there and bought up things and kind of put together at some level, groups of applications where they bought half dozen applications, and now they're going out there trying to figure out what their go-to-market strategy is as a group is, as opposed to being individually. But it's a very interesting time right now.
We've seen a lot of entrepreneurs take their company from startup to successful to sold out. And I think during the last 2 years, I probably followed a little bit more the private equity venture capital, because I was watching so many products get influenced by that path. And again, I'm not trying to unnecessarily call out anybody positively, negatively, but as you know, I've maintained a page, which is pretty simple for me. It's called The Money Behind the Technology, but it's on my personal website, where, we've seen purchases, or we'll say maneuvers, on various products. So let's just pick what used to be Conarch iChannel, clearly self-funded, and then Benchmark Capital came in and bought it, and ESW Capital was in it at one time, and others, and now clearly Iris has that particular product. So there's one example. Another one that I know we saw a number of times turn was the Abacus Next folks. I don't remember everybody involved, but I know that Providence Equity was involved with them, and PSG was involved with them, and I think Thomas Lee Partners has them right now. But there's also other technology tools, probably a little off topic for us, but the Barracuda and the Datto tools were all purchased by private equity groups this year, which is another part of the play here. But we can take the roll-ups into Abacus Next of tools like Office Tools as an example, or we could take the roll-up of others. And again, if we were talking about accounting software, boy, there's a whole different ballgame. But, in various times, you and I have helped with BillQuick's core system and the BillQuick before it, which is now owned by Sorrent Capital, just to name, another one. And it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. And that's the thing, I guess, that I wanted to communicate with this whole discussion, is that the days of everything being the same as last year when you deal with your vendors are probably over for right now, for this year at least. We've got a lot of organizations, a lot of people stopped spending money during the pandemic. And so the vendors have high expectations for 2022 from everything I've heard. And I'm simultaneously seeing that with all of these changes in management, I would suspect you're going to have a whole lot of new policies and rules and other things. We've seen a lot more a significant move toward electronic marketing and online selling from Wolters Kluwer, CCH, and Thompson, and Intuit, of course. And so that's a pretty significant shift, where in the past you had a sales rep you dealt with. Now you're doing more self-serve on their website, which is a shift now, because you may no longer have a throat to choke. You may have to choke Siri's throat if you have a problem with the application, because you may not have anybody there.
And so this strategy, and the reason for the discussion with Brian and I for you today, is traditionally you might have been an all one suite buyer. You might have bought everything from Thomson Reuters or from Wolters Kluwer CCH, or you might have been an Intuit shop and, bought Lacerte and Pro Series as your tech software and augmented it with other things. The suite players are fighting it out with everybody else, but there are so many best of breed players that have come along that have received funding to build products. So we can take, something that you and I have been involved with from the earliest of times, the TickTie Calculate product and the C paperless safe send returns. Been around that for quite a little while. And at this point, they have investments in their group as well. And I understand I want everybody to make money. I'm actually pretty good at saying, here, this is really fine. But when you look at C paperless safe send taking Lead Edge Capital for marketing and other development purposes. And you know what that does is it causes a lot of market pressures to go to market. In fact, you know, I did an interview pretty recently that was along this same tone, Brian, where, you know, I was concerned about minimally viable product being put into the market that wasn't complete enough to really work. I was concerned that the support quality was deteriorating. I was concerned that the marketing pressures were exceptionally high. And all I'm worried about is all of you that are listening to us trying to solve client problems and trying to have a collection of products that work together that got the job done. Now, you know, if the big boys all had a complete turnkey solution that did everything, well and good. But the fact of the matter is there's missing parts for all of these things. And as our service offerings are expanding, we're having additional products that we have to cover those service offerings. It's different in my mind than if you were just a tax shop or an audit shop that, you know, was trying to get those engagements completed and get them built. So in any case, lots and lots of changes. And I hesitate, although, you know, we'll provide the link to my personal website on these private equity deals, because I'm not trying to comment one way or the other, I think, other than they exist and they are changing the culture. So I think from there, are there other things that you believe that our listeners should know about?
You know, I think our listeners also need to understand that we're at the point now where some of the applications that they've historically bought are at the time where they may be time to replace. So we hear people talk a lot about practice management right now. There are a lot of people on the legacy practice management applications that are not really crazy about those practice management tools. We hear a lot of people talk about portals, and certainly the first gen portals out there were good. But we are seeing people now moving more toward more integrated portals to have a higher level of functionality than you would in a stock share file or anything like that. So I think the thing for our listeners is to figure out what your plan is for this year, because you do need to upgrade some things. You know, if we defer the maintenance, a lot of you deferred maintenance through the pandemic, and we don't want to go through with your software and not do the updates and the changes that you need to do to get to the right workflow and the right client service regime, you know, that you need to do to be the firm you want to be in the future. And the problem is, if you put it off, it's just another thing out there that you have to deal with.
And, you know, since you called out practice management, Brian, you know, you and I had the pleasure of writing a review on practice management together, and it was a fine effort. And at the time, I thought there'd be 15 to 20 practice management products that we would recommend. And today, I am tracking 48 different practice management products in the U.S. market. 48. And I'm not even really trying to watch what's being done in Canada. I'm not trying to watch what's being done. That's 48 in this market alone. So I'm thinking if you're interested in picking a practice management product, you almost might get down to, you know, vendor feature exhaustion, because there's so much. And well, the same type of thing is true. Sorry about that, stepping on you. But the same type of thing is true with portals. You know, if we just pick the products that I think I'm tracking on portal features alone right now, I believe I've got 37 different products in the U.S. market for portals. Now, you and I have played with my, you know, technology best practice matrix for a long time. I started building that doggone thing in the early 80s. In fact, I think the other day I told somebody I was working with that I started it in VisiCalc and transitioned it to Lotus 1-2-3 and then transitioned it to Excel. It's not a great grid, but it's got a lot of history in it.
Yeah, so I wonder how many different kinds of Mag Media it's been on.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's been on a lot of different kinds of media. But the point for all of you that are working with us, Brian and I in the technology lab try to give you the best guidance we can on a product by product basis. But we recognized here recently that we hadn't done a very good job of giving you an overall view of the market. So That's part of what we're trying to do. There's a lot of change going on from the big suite vendors to the significant players to the, you know, small startups that in some cases are self-funding, trying to make a go of it. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting products out there, but, you know, your ability, number one, to find them and your ability to vet them properly is going to be hard, because the other thing that's happened, I think there's huge expectation of sales in this year, and the sales numbers that have been missed in the prior years are causing claims to be made by salespeople that aren't necessarily so. So closing thoughts here, Brian?
You know, I think it's an interesting time. I think we are in a transition period, and I think a lot of our firms are in transition periods where we are starting to change and add advisory services. We're starting to change the way we do business with clients, starting to change the way we work with our team. And so practice management and portals may be a good thing for you to look at right now. Also, when it comes to the rest of the tools outside the major suite, we think you're going to see less personal customer service, and we think you're going to see more automated subscription type pricing, where your card just gets charged periodically for the services, and they interact with you through email and through chat generally. So it's a different world than we had 30, 40 years ago. I think you know, you've got more choice. And the challenge I think you've got when it comes to looking at the accounting technology here realistically is that I think it's like going to the gourmet grocery store. Okay. If I'm a new chef and I'm going to the gourmet grocery store, I want salt. Okay. So I want Morton salt. If I go to the gourmet grocery store, though, I got 8 linear feet with 200 different kinds of salt up there that all have different characteristics and things. Okay. So what this means is that you really need to know what you want in this market with all these independents. And just because something's good for somebody else doesn't mean it's good for you. So we encourage you to do your homework on these things and figure out what your long-term goals are for your firm and what you want your client experiences to be like and other things like that. Because as you lock in vendors now, 10 years ago, doesn't seem like that far ago. But if we look at business evolution and economic evolution, 10 years from now is a very long time.
Okay, I appreciate that thought. And you know, I'm just going to close up by suggesting there may be 20 products that we could do a technology lab on right now that are all relatively new. And we try to do longer haul recommendations with you. And we probably got another 20 or so products that could qualify into products that are relatively new, but still have been around a while. So when it comes to products, lots and lots of choice. So closing up, Brian, with your gourmet grocery store analogy, you know, since you bought salt, I'm going to take pepper. And it turns out that peppercorns lose their flavor once they're ground. If you take the highest quality rated peppercorn in the world and buy it as a ground pepper, it loses most of its attributes, which is why fresh pepper grinders are so important. And you can take almost the lowest quality peppercorn, grind it on the spot. It'll taste better than the highest quality peppercorn that's been ground into a pepper. So don't buy that pepper in bulk, and don't buy these products in bulk, because each one has a little bit of refinement to taste. And I think you're going to need some salt and pepper and management skills to put them together. You know, we have a lot of fun when we talk about these topics, and we'd sure like to be able to transfer that to you. And we'll do that in another technology lab. You have a fine day.
Thank you for sharing your time with us. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the Technology Lab, brought to you by CPA Practice Advisor.